Hello, welcome back to the Drinking Liberally podcast, the show that combines good alcohol with some friendly political banter. I'm Kevin Wilson, and I'm joined by my co-host, Jeff Fenner.
How's everybody doing?
This week, Jeff and I are also joined in our third seat by the one and only Dennis Skeet.
Hi, everybody.
Welcome back, Dennis. This is 2 weeks in a row for you, right?
Yeah, it's always good to be here.
Yeah. Impressive.
Nice so we to got, have you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like the holiday time. Things are, you know.
Recording a little earlier today.
Yeah.
Well, we were able to, you were able to fit us into your very busy schedule is what you're saying?
That's kind of what I'm saying, yeah. I have
a lot of questions about that, but that's for another podcast.
he's halfway to saying we should be thanking him.
I have a lot of questions about our friend's schedule, so I'm going to get to that later.
But Three Amigos are back. No Yogs this week, unfortunately, but we'll hold down the fort without him. This week, we're going to do something a little different. We're not going to talk about the news and the way we normally do, give you an update. Instead, we're going to take a step back and discuss our feelings on the current Democratic field of candidates running for president. We'll talk about whether or not our favorites in the race have changed, who we think might be front runners at this point. But most importantly, this episode is going to be all about the war on Thanksgiving.
I wasn't briefed on this.
Didn't you know, as a card-holding liberal, card-carrying liberal there, you have to declare war on Thanksgiving?
Yeah.
Donald Trump said...
We've declared war.
Yeah.
Oh, what are we fighting against?
Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, it is fucked up if you think about it.
Uh-oh. Now we're giving credence to Fox News. Donald Trump decided yesterday to just make up a story about how liberals are trying to change the name of Thanksgiving, which, I mean, I guess we could come up with a more badass name, but... Eh.
Yeah. I didn't get this memo.
That's what we're against? The name, not the genocide?
No, I think he literally just thinks we're going to change the name.
Oh. Yeah.
Not the whole genocide part?
He likened it to the war on Christmas, where people couldn't say Merry Christmas on some planet, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Right.
Weird.
And when he became president, it flipped a switch and everyone started saying Merry Christmas again instead of Happy Holidays.
Yeah, he saved Christmas.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Totally.
That
was one of his
it.
First, that, I think that was like day one he saved Christmas. His
all
first
right.
like 8 hours
hey,
of being president.
That.
Well, cheers to you, Mr. President. Cool. Thanks for saving.
That's the one thing you've done in your term? It's fucking amazing.
That and the tax cuts.
Yeah. All right. let's jump into this. Before we get to our debate talk, let's chat a bit about what we're drinking over the course of this episode. And this week, we are drinking the Citra Ass Down.
Nice.
Thanksgiving lager.
Yeah. This is a double IPA from the Against the Grain Brewery over in Louisville, Kentucky. You know, I picked this up right before the show because I saw that I love a well-named beer. I actually put another beer down. We'll probably save for a future episode. But I love a well-named beer, and if you throw a pun in there too, like I'm 100% sold because I'm a sucker for that kind of silliness.
It's a great can.
Yeah, we'll get to the can in a second. Awesome. I love it. it's a, like I said, a double IPA. It's made from the Citra variety of hops, so hence the Citra Ass Down. Pours a nice opaque, ambery orange. We couldn't really agree on what
that's
color
the word
this
you
was.
Came up
yep.
With.
And from their own notes, from the brewery's own notes, they say this is a very hop-forward American-style IPA. And I have to agree with them wholeheartedly on this. Like, the hops hit you really hard and fast on the first sip. But it honestly, it does finish kind of smooth. The hop, it doesn't linger as much. The one thing, like, the smell to it's like a decent floral smell, but the smell doesn't really carry over to the taste at all, I don't think. You'll get that citrus that you get from an IPA, but none of that floral taste to it. And just making he's like scrunching his nose up over there. He's
no, I'll wait till you get to the can.
It's 8.2% alcohol by volume.
Wow.
So yeah, this is up there. And you kind of taste it too. The alcohol, like it's noticeable in this. One complaint I do have, it's not about the taste, the beer itself. It's pricey. This is, yeah.
I wish it tasted better.
Four pack and it was like $24.
I wish it tasted better.
Whoa. Yeah. So, I mean, that's Jeff's take. Jeff, the famous IPA drinker over here. Not a huge fan of it, but yeah. Dennis, what are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, after the last couple weeks, we've had some really good beers.
Yeah.
Really good IPAs. This one, not one of my favorites. The citrus taste, bit weird. Like, it's not super strong citrus, but it's, I don't know, a little off-putting for me.
Yeah. I could tell when I handed you guys the glass to take a sip, both of you kind of made the same face. But, yeah, I mean, I don't hate it. It's definitely not up to the level of the last few weeks. We had some real winners.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been crushing it.
Yeah.
Does this grow on you? Like, you're moving through it pretty well.
Yeah, I'm about halfway through this one. It did grow on me. You know, make sure, don't drink this out of the can. Make sure you pour this in a glass. Let it air out a bit. It gets a little better. Okay. Jeff doesn't think it gets better.
I mean, a little harsh. Just the aftertaste is not fantastic, which the problem with that is with an 8.2% beer to never have the aftertaste, you got to keep having the, what would be the first taste?
Yeah, before taste.
You got to keep drinking it fast to make sure you don't get to the aftertaste.
The pre-taste.
So I'm probably going to drink like six of these, even though I don't like it, just to never get to the aftertaste. So
The aftertaste is it's a little malty, but not that really bready malty that we've had on some of the previous beers.
Can I tell you what it tastes like?
Yeah.
If you, instead, like, you got an orange, instead of eating the orange, mm-hmm. you just sucked on the peel. That's what the aftertaste is to me.
Mm. I can like the actually see
peel.
That.
It tastes like the orange peel instead of the orange. So, you guys, if you like orange peels, knock this out.
All right. Well, sorry, Against the Grain Brewery. Clearly won't be getting any sponsorship dollars out of them, but it is what it is. It's a fine beer. Probably not one I'll buy again, but I was happy to try something new. Let's talk a little bit about this can. It's got a really can. Unique can. Like I said, I picked it up because of the name of the beer, but the artwork on it also stands out. It's got this like lumberjack guy, tattoos all over his arms, holding a
mace.
A mace, yeah.
I love a mace.
A medieval mace in his hands.
And the dead turkey.
Yes, I think it's an ostrich, right?
Oh.
Yeah, standing behind an ostrich has a mohawk.
I was trying to make it a Thanksgiving theme thing.
Sorry. We can pretend this is a turkey.
Good.
And there's like arrows sticking out of everybody, like through them, actually.
Yeah. It's an aggressive can.
Very aggressive. And the description on the back is actually kind of aggressive as well. I don't know if you got a chance to read this yet. But on the back, it describes the beer. It says, sit your ass down and crush this beer. It's very demanding, which, you know, that's cool. But the description goes on to say, this beer is not candy or mother's milk. It is not brewed by gypsies or aliens, nor does it contain any zombie dirt, which I guess is a good thing. This is a double IPA brewed with Citra hops. It is sticky, hoppy, and delicious. Simply drink it and enjoy it. Don't hoard this beer. Sit your ass down and drink it now. So that aggression definitely lends to...
I don't ever want my beer to be sticky.
I mean...
Well,
that's a good point. But, yeah, no, a lot of IPAs can kind of get a little sticky, kind of like that mouthfeel to it. But I get where you're coming from over there, Jeff. We'll leave it at that.
Yeah, okay.
I do enjoy any beer that comes in a pint can, though. We need more of this. Mm. We need more pint cans out there instead of the 12-ounce
ones. They did a great job packaging. You know, work on the taste a little bit. We might have something.
Jeff coming out hot. Well, that's the Citra Ass Down double IPA from the Against the Grain Brewery.
Sit your ass down and fix your beer, sir. Just kidding.
We'll
just
not
kidding,
be tagging the brewery.
All
in this
those
episode.
All those sponsorship dollars just flying away.
I'm just watching them fly
all
out
these
the
episodes
window.
Of niceness. So we had to come with a reel sometimes.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. We've had so many good beers that it's been hard to say bad things about them. Yeah,
this one's not great. So I'm sorry.
All right, so that's what we'll be drinking during the course of this episode, whether you like it or not, Jeff. And we're going to do that while we talk about the debates and the field of candidates that are still out there.
Yeah.
So we didn't really touch on the debates for too long last week, even though there was a recent one. It was kind of overshadowed by impeachment news. But I want to revisit where we currently stand. Jeff, maybe start us off with some Vegas odds.
Oh, yeah.
On who the best picks are.
Right now, according to Odds Checker, which I'm sure is a super credible website, Donald Trump is currently your favorite. Boo. He's a little worse than even odds. He's 11 to 8. Followed by Joe Biden, which is 7 to 1. Behind them are Pete and Elizabeth Warren, both at 9 to 1 odds. Followed by, surprisingly, Bernie at 11 to 1. So right now, Bernie is sitting in fifth place. Jumping up above everybody else is Bloomberg. He's at 14 to 1 now.
14 to 1.
He's
for
made
Bloomberg.
A big move. Just real quick behind him, Hillary Clinton at 33-1, Andrew Yang at 40-1, and Pence at 50-1.
Those are some shocking odds right now. Although Donald Trump is still way up there, almost even, you said there. 11-8.
Well, let's keep in mind something real quick. If you're not a gambler, you don't gamble. So Vegas puts odds out basically to get even money on both sides. So if you have a public favorite, they want to put enough odds where you start betting against them. They basically want 50-50 on both sides. So just say for the sake of talk here, Biden and Trump are your two favorites to win this. They basically, for betting odds, want to get equal money on both sides. So you can't look into this as exactly who's going to win. But it does tell you that as far as we've come and we think with all the stuff going on with the impeachment, that it hasn't shifted it much. It's not like he's taken a big fall.
Right.
The money's still coming in on him right now to win the election. So
I think as it should. I think I keep saying this, I still think he has a really good chance of winning
Donald Trump, that is.
Yeah.
Can we real quick, and we're going to get into that, to not talk about impeachment at all, I think would be a mistake, but my question on it for you guys would be, we disagreed and flip-flopped a lot on this podcast whether we should impeach, we shouldn't impeach. And we're obviously not all the way through this. We haven't even taken a vote in the House. How are you guys, just before we get into the Democrats, how are you guys feeling right now that we did it? Are you thinking, good move, bad move? Do you take back what you thought? Where are you at?
I think it's a good move. It's putting it out there. You can't say that this was done in secret. We're bringing to light literal crimes that were committed by the president and the people that he surrounded himself with. Whether or not that moves the needle, and there's some polls that say it really hasn't moved the needle with the public. Everyone kind of made their minds up before these hearings even happened, unfortunately. But I think it's good to just have it out there in the open. And we've had a number of revelations, even since the last recording we did, that have kind of blown holes in Donald Trump's story.
And Devin Nunes, more importantly.
Yes, yeah. And Devin Nunes apparently is tied up in all of this as well and should have recused himself from it, but we're not going to see that happen. So I don't think we find out that information unless we had these hearings going on.
And that Nunes stuff never comes out.
Right. No, so I think it's important that we did do it. Even if it doesn't move the needle, it's the right move procedurally and for the sake of our democracy. Yeah.
Yeah, I think what it all comes down to is there's a portion of the country that's just not going to ever decide that Trump should be impeached. And I really don't think that us going through this inquiry is going to drive those people out. I don't think there's going to be some like massive wave of anti-impeachment that's going to come and like cause Trump to win. And I really do think that the fact that we went through this diligently and I think soberly.
I wasn't sober for any of that, by the way. So,
well, I watched a lot of it at work. So unfortunately, I was sober for it.
I will tell you, I love that word because I think that best describes Adam Schiff through this.
Yeah, the Democrats approach, right? 100%.
And more importantly, him. Yeah. Like, just super steady.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, never got off topic, never got bogged down in this thing. Like, salute to him. There was no pizzazz in him, but he's not a pizzazzy guy. If I ever hear that effing word again.
Yeah.
Yeah, we cut you off. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I just...
I thought it was a great word.
I just think the people on our side of the aisle, the liberal-leaning voters, they're not going to be turned off by this, right? They're going to, like you said, a lot of things came to light, and I think it's going to galvanize our side, and I don't think it's going to turn... I don't think it's going to drive Republicans to the polls. I think it's, I think they're just like, the Democrats are, they're against Trump as they always were. But I think if we didn't go through this, I think it would have been cowardly. It would be seen as cowardly. And I think it'd be hard to get Democratic voters out.
You said it right. I mean, we had to do this for democracy.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
My big takeaway from it, I don't think any of us sitting at this table ever thought this was going to remove him from office. I don't think we were ever. The odds are super stacked in the Senate. It's not going to happen. I think the most important thing that's going to come of this isn't even about the presidency. I think it's going to be in the other seats that are up in the Senate and the House next year. Mm-hmm.
That's important too.
I think we got a lot of really, really good stuff to put in
those TV commercials and stuff that we're putting out, a lot of like Nunez is dead meat when he comes up.
Yeah.
Like, cause there's just so many just little things now that can be built in. And if say Trump, as the odds say, he's going to be president the next 4 years, most important thing for us then is to have the Senate, right?
Yep.
And just make sure nothing happens and we get through it.
And maintain control of the House with like Nunez and, you know, Stefanik and all these people that we got to flip those seats too.
And I will say the people that are up for re-election, a lot of them have put themselves in a really bad light with some of their takes on this and how they refuse to address it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if this comes out, they probably won't even have a trial in the Senate. I'm fully prepared for them to just be like, we're not doing this. It's not happening. But we got a lot of good stuff out of this House thing. A lot of stuff came to light. And I think that's good.
Yeah, huge, I think.
So obviously, I mean, it's a real possibility that Donald Trump will be the Republican candidate running for the 2020 election.
Well, he'll be the candidate.
Yeah. I mean, I'm saying that he will not be removed. Yeah, I think the odds are he will not be removed by the Senate. So let's talk about the Democrats then.
Yep.
Who's the best person right now? Just give me one name, each one of you around the table. Who's the best person right now to go up against Donald Trump?
Pete. Mayor Pete.
Who's the best?
Best. To go against Donald Trump. Dennis is struggling with this.
Well, clarify a little bit. What do you... So... I'm not changing
like
my
personal
answer.
Opinion.
No, who's the best? Who's the person that stands the best chance of beating Donald Trump?
Okay, to win.
Not
to
your favorite. You might have a different favorite.
Okay.
But to get on the debate stage, go up there and win.
Yeah, go toe to toe with Donald Trump and win the election.
I'm going to change my answer.
Yeah.
Mayor Pete.
Oh, God, man. I don't know. I
it's being recorded.
I know.
On the hot seat over here.
Bernie?
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to go Biden. It pains me to say it, but Biden.
This
yeah,
is great.
We're all different on this, and we'll get into our reasoning.
Yeah, we got to do that.
Oh, let's just jump straight. Jeff, well, same order. Why?
So I really think, and you know, a lot's been Pete's been hammered a little bit because he definitely switched course a little bit midstream here, from his first two debates to the last two. Right? So he's really
he pivoted more towards.
He's taken
center.
A little bit more of a center role. He's gotten a little more aggressive. He's definitely attacked back well when he's been attacked. And the one thing you do see, though, and it's a little bit off, like there's a lot of respect for him up there because there should be. I just, when I watch him handle the attacks or somebody try to come after him, as seen by this story where, you know, somebody wrote a story, Mayor Pete's a motherfucking liar. And Pete actually...
Was that the headline?
Yeah. It was. And Pete reached out and they had a great conversation. And I think... what Trump excels at is low blows. Trump's going to make up nicknames for you. He's going to sit there and try to spin the narrative on you and make you a joke up there. And I can see it happening against Bernie. And I can see it happening against Biden. Just so if we're debating here on this, it's not going to happen because Pete's going to pull up the fact that he went to war, that you know he has the credentials, the education, the public service that Trump doesn't have. And I think he's got the sledgehammer on all of this stuff. And I just think he's smarter. And he's... You know, no offense, he's younger. All of his wits are there. He's not going to stumble over words. He's super well-spoken. And that's going to matter for public perception. And this is what we're doing right now. Make no mistake. This election is not going to come down to your policy on healthcare. It's just not. Not if you're running against Trump. It's going to be perception. It's going to be the show you put on. It's going to be the way you battle him back. And that's the guy that I think has the best chance to go toe-to-toe and just stand there and take the punches and roll through them.
Okay. Dennis, why Bernie?
So I love Jeff's advocate for Pete. And
she's your personal favorite. Too,
are you okay
right?
over there? You're struggling with
I this. Am struggling. But but unfortunately, what I have to admit is that this is more of a slight against the other candidates as opposed to as confidence in Bernie. Like, I feel that I don't trust Biden when he gets on that stage that he's not going to kind of fall to pieces up against Trump. I don't trust Warren that she won't get torn down by the media and you know, go down similarly to Hillary Clinton, even though I know that's unfair to just say she's a woman, so she's going to lose. And then Pete, I just think... I think Pete, as much as I'm for him, I think he's got, you know, we've talked a ton about this. He's got, you know, the black voters that right now are just not interested in hearing anything from him. And I do think that can change and to some extent will change. But I think Bernie at this point, he had the heart attack. He's back out there. He's fired up. He's not shown any sign of fading. And I think him and Trump both have the same kind of, even though we know for Trump was a lie, the same kind of populist rhetoric that I think will resonate. So, yeah. It's,
do we attack each other's points now or
no,
after you?
No, we're going to wait. Okay. No, I think that's all valid. You know, I choose Biden. He's not my personal favorite for this, but I think he still stands the best chance. I understand that both of you kind of made perception arguments there. And Biden is very gaffe prone, but it hasn't hurt him in the past, and I don't think it's going to start hurting him. I think it hurts him only with the further liberal left. They will pick it apart, but and we've seen him kind of make a fool of himself by our standards a number of times on stage, but it hasn't hurt his support in the polls at all. Like, so it means either people aren't watching it, not paying attention, or they just don't give a shit. I lean towards the latter because I think there's a good chunk of America right now that, I'm not saying this is a good thing, but has seen Donald Trump get away with everything he does. And now the bar is so low that no matter what gaffe Biden makes, it's nowhere in the close range of what Donald Trump has done. So that's, again, setting a super low bar. I understand that. But I also...
This is the most uninspiring thing I've ever heard. Hey, man,
I told you I wasn't happy about it.
I know. This isn't our personal favorites. Yeah. I understand.
But there's a reason why he's polling so high in nationwide polls. Maybe not, you know, Pete's climbing the polls and Biden's been climbing the polls in, you know, the primaries and the initial primary states. But Biden still leads by pretty handily in nationwide polls. We forget about that because we live on the East Coast. We are very involved in social media. And Twitter is a bubble machine, a right and left wing bubble machine. If you only look at Twitter, you'd assume everyone's a Bernie Sanders supporter, essentially.
Yeah.
Yep.
You won't see a lot of Biden support on Twitter.
Nope.
But he has a ton of support out there from older Democrats that, you know, people might derisively call them, you know, establishment Dems. But sorry, but you can't ignore those people.
Mm-hmm.
They're still out there. And Biden has a huge chunk of support from black voters right now still. And that is a super important voting block that you can't afford to alienate. And until I see that support start waning from him, and it might, who knows? We've got a long time before the next election. We've got, you know, a little less than a year now. But until I see his support from black voters, especially black women, start to decline, I think he's still the best chance out there for winning.
The tough thing about you saying that, and I understand it, is I think if you look at the nationwide polls right now, they don't matter, because what will organically happen is whoever comes out of this primary is going to get that support. Like, you know, Dennis, you've said it. You said, speaking specifically to Pete, but talk about Bernie, whoever, if they don't have the black vote right now, and I don't want to just single it down to that because that's it's making it too simplistic, but let's just say that. And you can tell me if I'm saying this wrong, because you're the one that told me this.
Yeah, go ahead.
If Biden doesn't come out ahead in Iowa, in New Hampshire, by the time we get to South Carolina, whoever is running in that, people have such a disdain for Trump. People are going to be like, okay, time to go. This is who's got the shot to win this now. So I do think looking at the nationwide polls, you have to. But I do think it's super important to look at our primary, because – the same thing as the three of us sitting here. We all just said who we think are going to win. We can get to who we would like to win. But all of us, I think, at this table, and I want to speak for you guys, but if all of a sudden I see Bernie's going to do this, I'm not going to go vote Mayor Pete to vote Mayor Pete.
Right.
Like, I'm going to be like, all right, the most important thing is Trump out of office, right?
Yeah.
And then we can start picking nits about who we would like, what policies we like. But I think most of the country that's going to vote in what's coming up is going to fall in line with that.
Well, I think everyone here at this table, at least, and from most of my discussions with Democrats, it seems everyone has come to consensus, like, yes, we will vote blue no matter who.
Yeah.
And so that's all well and good, and I will 100%, whoever this candidate is, I'm not voting for Donald Trump. So my vote is just as much of a vote against him as it is for any particular candidate. And I feel like a lot of people will feel that same way. But let's keep this strictly to like the primaries and like narrowing this field down.
Yes.
And
you think Biden's I think there's a place.
I still think he has the best shot across the country.
But what about the primaries?
So the primaries will be interesting because I don't think he wins Iowa. I think Pete actually does have a very good chance of winning Iowa.
I don't think he has a shot in Iowa.
You don't think Pete does?
I think Pete and Bernie have the best shot at Iowa.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that
I don't think Biden has. That's
right. 100%. New Hampshire is interesting because I could see that. I can't remember if we touched on this in the previous episode, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself. But New Hampshire splits their vote depending on how you poll in the primary.
Yep.
And so there's a very good chance that state could be split three ways. So I think there's validity to your argument that...
Big help from Mayor Pete if that's split three ways, by the way.
If Pete took New Hampshire, takes Iowa, yeah, maybe he starts polling better in South Carolina because voters in South Carolina say, hey, that's... I guess this is the guy. Time to, you know, get behind him. But if they split that New Hampshire vote, I think it's still an open race for a while, and South Carolina is probably not going to just fall in line immediately.
Real quick, though, because I put words in your mouth. Can you tell me what you were telling me? Tell everybody what you were telling me about how that works.
Yeah, I think a number of different podcasts and people have like made a similar statement, but this general kind of idea.
We're the only one that matters, so.
Yeah, of course. The general idea is that just black voters in this country, they want to vote for a winner. I mean, obviously everyone wants to vote for a winner, but the kind of narrative is that black people have a lot more to lose when things, well, just be candid, when Republicans are president, black voters usually have the most to lose. So when Obama came around and he was, you know, running, black people weren't really all that excited about him because they're like, okay, who is this guy? I've never heard of him before. You know, we know Hillary Clinton, so, you know, we're not really going to push, you know, for Obama. But when he came back and he won Iowa, it changed a lot of minds because it basically just said like, oh, this guy can actually win. Like this person's not just someone that is going to win in South Carolina and states like that and they get blown out everywhere else. This is a guy that can actually win in Iowa and New Hampshire and those kind of places.
And that was a surprise.
Yeah, it was a huge shock that he won in Iowa. And because of that, then black voters got behind him because they said, okay, this guy can actually win. And there's definitely a path where Pete wins Iowa.
You see the parallel there, right? The shock if he wins Iowa.
Yeah. Right. He wins Iowa. He does really well in New Hampshire. Second, maybe even wins. And then a lot more people in South Carolina. I mean, you have Nevada first, but a lot of people in South Carolina are going to take a really hard look at him.
I think they're going to start reading into it a little bit more.
Right, because they don't know who he is. People still joke about his name, like how do you pronounce his name? Like they don't know who he is. They know Biden. They know Sanders. They know Harris. That's like 34 people. Like, who's this other guy? But if he wins and does really well in those first three states, they're going to take a hard look at him. And if the narrative is that Biden can't win this, because he didn't do well in any of those early states, and he's just not looking good, this whole thing could shake up really quick. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, Pete will win South, you know, I'm definitely not saying Pete will win South Carolina. He's not winning South Carolina, but I'm not saying he'll just get massive amounts of support, but I'm just saying it becomes unpredictable if he does really, really well and Biden, and the narrative for Biden is that he's flailing and it doesn't look good at all for him.
I think there's validity to that, definitely. It's important you brought up that Nevada is before South Carolina, and I feel like that's a place where Biden probably runs the table. Right?
You can do really well there.
Let me ask you about Biden, though, and not to keep tagging your Biden pick, but because I have a lot about the Bernie shit. my thing is, I think once this gets really narrowed down, I think people are going to really start, because like Biden was like the cool dude next to Obama. He had the whole meme thing that went when Trump was taking over. That was incredible. I think people are going to really start to see him without Obama. There's just gaping holes here. Like, it's, you know, he was in a good spot with Obama. I think he's had some tailwinds from that, obviously. We all wanted him to run, me included, big, big time. If you go back, the first episodes, I think we were all like, let's go, let's go, let's go. Mm-hmm. Because we really thought, like, all right, this guy's just going to win. He's Obama. He was in that
White
House.
Actually hadn't even announced yet when we did our first round table.
And we
like
kept
this.
Asking. We kept asking, him to go. And I think we all thought he would be a little closer to the Obama narrative. And he's just absolutely not. He's, and like you said, Obama is looked at now a little more centrist than maybe we fabricated in our mind if you look at the actual policies.
Yeah.
But Biden's taken this way middle. With the marijuana stuff and all of that. So I do think some of that's going to shine through when we narrow this down to three or four actual candidates. I really do.
I think before I have a bone to pick with the marijuana take on it. So I just want to stop, derail us for a second there. Because yes, I think that was a awful, awful take to say out loud, but it's a little more nuanced than I think it got play on Twitter because he did say he is in favor of decriminalizing marijuana across the country and then letting states decide about recreational use. Which is not an awful take in and of itself. It's not as progressive as a lot of the other candidates who are saying legalize recreational marijuana at the federal level. Now, he did say it was potentially a gateway drug. Huge problem with that. Like, get with the times, Biden. Like, that's a fair criticism. But I think there's a little more nuance to the legal aspect of his argument.
That's fair.
Well, let's expound on that. I think that's my problem with him. He doesn't get it. Like, you know, he's been attacked on some of his older takes, which he can say, listen, I've changed, I've grown, busing, all the stuff that happened to him, right? But he keeps over and over again walking into this stuff. And not that Trump's the master going to go up there and debate you on policy, but if you walk into these traps with Trump and he sees it,
finished.
He is going to destroy you on this stuff. And Biden just over and over again can't help himself. He's got to, if he, like you said, if he had that take on marijuana and left out the gateway drug part, we're not, it's not even a half an hour news
story.
It's a
fine, it's a slightly more centrist take.
But now all of a sudden we're talking about it for 3 weeks because he had to throw that stupid sentence in and he can't help himself. Not your candidate.
I'm not taking it personally, don't worry. Like, this is what we're here to talk about.
I just feel like we're going through it.
Yeah, but his poll numbers didn't drop afterwards.
Yeah, no.
Nationwide.
Right.
But I don't put as much into that.
Yeah, I really don't. I think he's strong, but and to defend my Bernie take a little bit.
Yeah, let's go to Bernie now. Then you guys can kill me.
I think compared to the other candidates, similar to Trump, Bernie has a base that's not going anywhere.
Yeah,
and absolutely. I don't think that is the case for any of the other candidates in the Democratic primary. If Biden gets shaky, if Pete starts looking like it's not going to work, I think, same with Warren, people are going to jump ship and they're going to go to find someone. I think Bernie's people are not going anywhere. And that leaves
even if a Biden or Pete became the nominee?
Well, I hope.
Then they go.
I hope that at the end of the day, they'll support whoever the nominee is. Mm-hmm. But I just mean if things get a little shaky, like Biden's got a very high floor. That's just not, he's not going to fall unless he's just completely out.
Right.
Whereas the other ones, like Warren, like I know we're going to talk about this later, but like Warren, I'm not even sure. I mean,
I think
we'll talk about
it quicker than we think.
But I'm not even sure what really changed definitively to explain this massive drop. And I don't think you're ever going to see that for Biden. I mean, for Bernie, unless he's just out. But like right. if Bernie just slips up, people aren't going to charge out and find someone else. Where for these other candidates, they slip up and they look vulnerable. Their support's disappearing.
Bernie has
vanishing.
A like very devoted base.
Yeah.
To put it lightly.
Mildly, yeah.
Do you think Bernie will ever, because he probably could, weaponize that? Like, he could literally let everybody know if he's not the candidate that he holds this election hostage. Because, like you said, we don't vote. Here's my first choice. Here's my second choice, right? And Bernie's getting votes, regardless of who the candidate is, as we've talked through this. It could be Biden. It could be Pete. When it comes to actual election time, Bernie's getting votes.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I hope he's learned his lesson from 2016, that if he does see that, you know, writing's on the wall, sorry, you're not getting the nominee, then it's time to throw your full weight behind whoever that person is.
Because if he doesn't,
because otherwise it's Donald Trump's getting
reelected. He's the worst.
Yeah,
politician we've ever had.
Yes,
he doesn't mean anything he says.
Right,
I agree, and it's terrifying because I do think
he can literally hold this hostage.
I think Bernie, absolutely. out of all the candidates, I mean, I can just see it now. We have a front runner, and then there's Bernie, and those two people go all the way to the convention because you may have someone that's ahead in delegates and everything like that, but Bernie's going to have a sizable amount, and he's going to know that, I don't think his people are just going to like, okay, Bernie's not it, so we're just going. I think he will maintain a certain strength into the convention if he wanted to. If he doesn't say, okay, I'm out, if he just kind of says, well, I'm still running, he's going to walk in that convention with a lot of strength behind it, and that terrifies me.
Yeah, the last thing we need is a contested convention at this point in the game because you're just handing it to Donald Trump.
Please, God.
Yeah.
I think that, and I do think, outside of Bernie, he's the wild card in this, I do think the other candidates will fall in line behind a candidate.
I 100% agree with that. I think everyone on that list except for Tulsi.
Yeah. Tulsi's a plant, so.
Every other person will say, I'm throwing my full weight. Yeah. I will campaign for this person.
And let's be honest, Tulsi doesn't matter.
No, I know. I was half joking.
But Bernie matters.
Yeah, he does.
Especially because there's all the stuff about him possibly getting screwed out of it last year and all the stuff that happened with the DNC. I don't want to replay that again because, you said, that's just handing votes over. Like, you guys can't get your shit together.
Yeah, and if he is not the nominee and he does not step down and throw his weight behind that person, I think it reveals exactly who he is. And I'm hoping that's not the case.
Would he take a vice president role?
I don't know.
In this climate, yeah, he might. But I think it just...
I'm terrified.
AOC coming out for him, which was little bit of a shock.
I don't get it.
But, it makes sense.
Why?
They're both...
Because they're really tight. And She
they're both kind of on the same
volunteered for
area
him.
Of the spectrum. No, just their views do line up politically.
She came up under him. She when he ran, she was like a volunteer. She worked in his candidate. But the fact that she came out, I think I would say this early, to endorse him, and then brought the other two of the three members of the squad. I forgot their names. And Tlaib.
Yeah.
The fact that they all came out as well is again, just illustrates that this guy's he's got some strength behind him.
He does. And the scary thing about him is once we get down the road, we're talking about the stuff he's saying is going to happen as quickly as it is. It's the same as Trump saying he was going to do X, Y, and Z in his first couple years, build a wall, all this shit. It's not going to happen. We could clean sweep the Senate and the House and put Bernie in, and you're not getting his not to steal from your take, Kevin, you're not getting that through in a year.
No.
Yeah, let's talk about that before we get to the most important person in this race. Michael Bloomberg is who I'm talking about. let's talk about that. We talk off mic, we were discussing Elizabeth Warren's decline in polls. And in a recent Quinnipiac poll, she dropped 14 points, which is massive. That's a cliff.
That's a rock.
Yeah. Just plummeting. And a lot of it is probably to do with her backtracking on Medicare for All. Mm-hmm. She's kind of moved away from saying, I'm going to have Medicare for All, to more of a middle ground where there's stepping stones to it in her plan. So it's not as extreme as a lot of people would have liked on the left.
Silly enough, it might actually work.
I personally actually have no problem with that plan. I think it's a more logical plan because you're not going to upend the entire insurance industry overnight.
I wish was the plan. This was the plan from the beginning.
Yeah,
if she
starts with that, she's not dropping 20
points. I agree.
Yeah.
So I think she lost a lot of credibility with liberal voters because she's seen as backtracking. Again, it's all about perception rather than the reality of it. Because Bernie Sanders is out there saying, I'm going to institute Medicare for All in my first year, which... Bullshit.
No.
It's just not realistic. Even with a completely democratically controlled government.
Won't happen.
House, Senate, presidency. No way they're passing
that
in the first
Freedom
year.
Caucus. There's still, you're just not getting it happening.
You're going to need a lot of votes, and you're going to need votes from red state senators that are just not going to, even Democratic red state senators, are not going to vote outright for it. Or at least Bernie's version of it. So I think there does need to be some kind of middle ground. I think Medicare for All is a fantastic idea, and I want to get to that point. And this will sound like I'm backtracking myself on my own views on it, but I think there's something to be said about looking at it realistically and plotting this out over time. So when Warren says, hey, I'm going to do it year three, to me, I'm like, yeah, well, that kind of checks out. Congress moves slow. It probably will. The ACA took years to get through Congress. And when Obama had a democratically controlled Congress, it took years to get the ACA passed. And then they still made concessions to Republicans. So I think that has to do with a lot of her drop there. I don't think you can be discounting the fact that she is a woman. That
I think that
she, unfortunately, that's a reality. I don't think it's the major part of this at all, but I think it factors in for sure.
I think what you said actually is more, it's a timing thing. So she gets hit in the debates in the mouth, and they're like, how are you paying for this? And she won't answer the question. And
going but then back, she did come out and answer
right,
the question.
Right, but I'm just saying, going back to remember Kamala in the beginning, we were all like, just answer the question. Like,
yeah.
we're gonna think on that. So she doesn't answer it in that debate. And then instead of doubling down, she comes out with the smart way that might work, right?
Yeah.
The problem
the plan,
is she,
if you actually take the time to read it, it's long and boring. Yeah, but
the,
yeah.
The problem is she did it after she got punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She didn't do it on the fly. And right now it's all optics. Mm-hmm. I don't think it has anything to do with her being a woman. I think you could actually talk the reverse on that. I think she was the strongest woman in this field, and she was buoyed a little bit
She's
by that.
She's still the strongest woman in the field. 100%.
Yeah. You know, I think the timing of the backtrack, along with the fact, and I know you don't agree with this completely, but she came out so hot and heavy way too early with every policy. And say she had to backtrack on this Medicare for all thing, but she also did it at the same time she dropped two of those policies she told us about 6 months ago that were fantastic, and she could make those talking points. I think she could have leveled. She's going to drop a little bit no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. But I think she could have maybe dropped 5 or 6 points if she was able to just change the conversation to something more positive. She really didn't have any bullets left in the chamber. She was standing there holding this new policy by itself. And like you said, if you want to read it, it might make sense. But no one's reading this.
I know no one's reading it, unfortunately. Yeah. I wish that wasn't the case. I think a couple other things factor into this decline. And I think we've seen a lot of donors come out against her, like establishment Democratic donors.
Of course.
Came out against her because a lot of them are millionaires or even billionaires.
Yeah,
they don't want a wealth tax. I think that definitely has got to hurt them. And you've got people like Bill Gates going out and saying, he's like, oh, well, I don't want to vote for Trump, but like, this isn't really fair what Elizabeth Warren's talking about.
Yeah.
Like, listen,
can we talk about that for just
a second? I'm kind of fucking sick of being held hostage by billionaires who are threatening to take their philanthropy away if we don't give them exactly what they want. Go screw yourself. Guess what? Pay your fair share, and then we don't have to worry about your philanthropy because it'll be paid for.
Can I ask you guys a question about that?
Disgusting, man.
It's always been the, we'll use these terms right now, the meme or the joke that Republicans vote against their own self-interests in like the Bible Belt, the Rust Belt, those places, right? Not supporting Elizabeth Warren in favor of these billionaires is the Democrats trying to take that away from the Republicans. Like, what?
It's
like, watch, if you could actually, and I'm sure 538's got info on this, and I'll look, but if you could actually tie her drop to the wealth tax, that would be the most discouraging thing I've ever seen in my life. Because, like,
I don't think that's the case,
not
because
how
she campaigned
vote.
On the 2 cent tax, right?
Right.
And I think that was part of her rise.
Yeah.
Like, she was out there.
So that's not what's
that's
happening.
Not it. The wealth tax,
I think that's insanely popular.
It is. Even among Republicans, the wealth tax is popular.
And she's also running, that's her big, strong thing now. And I don't think anybody on the stage outside of Tulsi Gabbard is against this wealth tax and Democrats, right?
Yeah.
None of them have been like, bad idea.
Right.
Well,
yeah, maybe different
Booker,
forms, but.
Booker didn't say it was bad. He just, Biden tried to characterize it.
Biden's
way.
Absolutely saying this is not the way to fix it.
Really?
So.
But yeah, I think there's, so like a number of things I think are snowballing in a bad way for her because this also might be returning to the norm because she had a pretty historic
rise
early. And she got a ton of positive press coverage that put her into, if not a front or a contender to be the front running spot, which invites criticism. And if you're in the front running spot, like you're going to get a lot more media attention, good and bad. I think a lot of this has not played well for her. She does not have the base that Bernie has that's devoted to her no matter what.
Right.
There's some of them, sure. But not
a lot of her base is new.
Not at the fanatical
stream.
Level that Bernie has.
Right.
Bernie's had it since 16, right?
Yeah.
This
and
is new
Bernie has, I mean, they've got a lot of very similar positions.
Yep.
So there's probably a lot of people that are torn between Bernie and Warren. And, you know, they might look at her back, quote unquote, backtracking on the Medicare issue as a deal breaker for them. And now they're fully in Bernie's camp.
I keep coming back when we're looking at how the polls are changing that. This really has been a marathon, not a sprint. And I think she's the person that's in the marathon that's like, can't wait to go run the New York City Marathon. And the first 5 miles, she's at 7 minutes a mile. And then you realize, holy crap, I have 21.2 more of these and I can't keep this pace up. And she's now 12 minutes a mile without that actual octane boost in her. And maybe she's got it still, because on the flip side of this, we're not there yet.
Yeah.
We're at mile, what, 12 maybe in this race. But watching the other candidates that have kind of made moves in this, and I do like the fact Bernie, Biden, and Pete, I think we're really measured when we had 10 people on the stage. You know, they stayed with their message. They didn't try to step outside of their zone. They weren't trying to win the election. They were trying to stay on that stage. And then once it gets down and we're going to pare down now, I think those three are in really good position now to be like, and here's my thoughts on this. And it's going to move the needle a little bit.
I think Pete was really, really smart, like you said, with how he rolled things out. And I think it's because he knew he had the staying power. He wasn't going to get knocked out early. And he put
had the donors, he had the money.
Yeah, he has money behind him.
And,
yeah.
And the polling, he had the numbers.
And he put a lot into Iowa. And I think it's showing now that
he put so many boots on the ground there.
Yeah.
Did he put more money into Iowa? I have to look this up than anyone else.
He had the had the most team members. Like yeah.
It's massive.
And New Hampshire.
He was that's his shot. He was like, I'm this is my shot I'm taking, right? And a lot of other people didn't do that. Like Harris has now had to like remove staff from other early states because she was trying to spread it around early, and she just assumed I'm gonna make it through Iowa, I'll make it through Hampshire, and now she's like, oh crap, I need to really focus on Ohio.
And now she's 100-1 shot according to
yeah. Business. So it's not good, but I think I don't want to criticize Warren too much in her strategy, because I do think at the time the rise that she got when she was pumping out those plans, because. Remember, Bernie already had basically that lane locked up.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Warren was trying to edge in there and get somewhere. And the work she did and all those plans put her on the stage and got her to that, you know, contender, almost front runner status. And yeah, now it's looking like, oh, you know, you really don't have, you know, a lot more bullets to fire. But if she didn't do that, I don't know if she had the staying power. I don't know if she had gotten here.
I'll echo you really quick before we get off this, that being a woman probably led into a little of that. She needed to make a move to establish
differentiate
herself to even have a shot, or she'd probably be sitting with Kamala at 100-1.
Yeah.
Had she not rolled out those policies and got that bump early. So I get it, but really she came out so hot and now it's just, not there.
Let's talk about the most important person that won't be on the stage. Michael Bloomberg.
Do we have, I mean,
we can all just agree that he should just fuck off.
I just don't. I mean, he is, I've already seen it. All I want to do is delete Facebook, and all my family wants to do is see pictures of my kids, and I can't. But I'll tell you what.
If you start putting your kid in like Mayor Pete onesies, then you can avoid that problem.
It's coming. they're ordered. I open that stupid thing to like kind of look real quick, throw some pictures on or whatever. And these Bloomberg ads, they're there, bud.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have to scroll one time when I open that app, and it's climate change. He's got the ad for that. Like, he has put big, big dollars into this. I talked to my grandma. I talked to my family, and I begged them, please, please do not pay attention to anything on Facebook for this thing.
Who asked for this?
What does he think he's gaining? Like, he's not winning. He's going to take the Trump route. He's going to try to buy this election.
That's definitely a possibility.
And can he outspend Bernie?
Yes. I mean,
he can outspend anyone.
He can outspend, anyone out there. And he won't qualify for the debates.
Nope. Right.
But that might be appealing to some people. I was actually at a wedding recently, and I think I texted you guys in our mass text there when I overheard this. But I was at the wedding, and some guy, he's like, oh, did you see Bloomberg entered the race? And I was like, yeah. And one of the guys in the group says, you know, I don't want to vote for Trump, but look what the Democrats have out there.
Oh, no.
So Bloomberg might be a good thing. I'm paraphrasing, but that was the sentiment behind it.
Yeah.
And it caught me so off guard because I even asked the question a minute ago, like, who is this for? Why is this happening? And I think there are some people that will say, like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Like, another billionaire who's not going to be beholden to the the interests of corporations.
Jesus Christ.
Forgetting the fact that his name is on like 30 different corporations. Like,
if I hear one more time that it's amazing that he's not going to take a salary as president, I might jump off a building.
Let's pause right there, because let's make this very clear to anyone that thinks that's a great idea. That
you're not losing money by becoming the president of the United States.
There's a reason why the president is offered a salary. They get $400,000 a year is what it currently is at. And yes, it sounds awesome in theory. Like, oh, this person's turning down the salary. Donald Trump turns down his salary and says that he's donating it. I'm not sure where, but...
And, to Trump.
And Michael Bloomberg is saying he will not take the salary because I don't need it. And I'm like,
why is this a talking point? Kill it.
It sounds awesome in theory, but there's a reason why we want people to accept this salary. One, there's the optics that you are beholden to the public, the taxpayers that are paying your salary.
Correct.
The president works for us. Don't forget that.
We want to pay you.
Our tax dollars go to paying these politicians. These people should be doing what we want. That's why we vote them into office. We pay them out of our own pockets. Never forget that you are paying these people.
Yep. All of them. Nunez, all of them.
Yeah, unfortunately. But all this does in the long run, if we start getting this trend of people coming in, turning down this salary, is we're going to have nothing but billionaires running for the presidency.
100%.
Because anyone that doesn't have that kind of... If I want to run for president when I turn 35, I can't afford, out of my own pocket, with my current savings, cannot afford to run a campaign. And guess what? I will need that presidential salary.
Yeah.
And maybe I've got good ideas, but the fact that someone else said, oh, okay, I'm just going to donate it instead, they win based on that, is utter bullshit, because it just cuts out every other person that cannot afford to run in the race. That's why it's important that the president gets a salary. And I'm actually one of those people that way back when I was like, why do we pay the president? That's ridiculous. He gets to live for free and all that. Like, why is he getting a salary on top of it? And this is why. It took me a while myself to like understand why this matters. But this goes so far beyond the simple optics of you being a charitable person and donating this salary. It needs to be there. It's there for a reason. The founders thought this through amazingly. 250 years ago.
The people that work for like AOC, right? That's a public service. They're not getting rich off of this. Mm-hmm. If you take away the salary, it's just going to open up these giant corporations for paying more money into it.
Pay to play is what it becomes across the board.
Trump has now obliterated the emoluments clause. It doesn't exist anymore. It's not a thing. Sorry. It's gone. Yeah. He's obliterated it. And
you say that until there's a Democratic president with a Republican Congress.
But don't
they'll remember real fast.
Don't think someone that's a billionaire that's got himself there, who's also the most conceited person in history because every company has the word Bloomberg in it. This guy doesn't run any. It's Donald Trump. It's Trump Towers. It's Trump College. It's Trump Airlines. Bloomberg has the news. Bloomberg has this. It's all his name on it. It's the same exact path. And like you said, we don't get somebody like AOC if we're not paying these people, right? AOC was a bartender. She couldn't run for this unless she's getting a salary. We can't take that out of this, like you said. Yeah. We're not, like, I don't know Pete's personal finances or Elizabeth Warren's, but I'm assuming the $400,000 a year, we want them to be comfortable, right? Yeah. We want them, you're running the country. You shouldn't be worrying about paying like your mother's health bills if you have to make defense decisions.
Because it also avoids.
Pete still has student loans he's got to pay off.
Yeah.
Correct. And
it also avoids bribery.
100%.
If a president can't afford to pay their student loans, in that example, and someone comes in and say, "Hey, man, I can pay this off. I can pay off your parents' house and such."
And just make sure that
you're beholden to them,
and make sure we can still charge 20% interest to these kids that can't afford it.
Right.
Yeah.
That's all you got to do. Vote against this. We'll wipe that out for you.
Yeah.
So there's a reason for that.
And so that's
sorry to detract there, but I think that's
no. I love that
you
said that. I think we stumbled onto a really important thing. That's a terrible talking point. It's stupid. We get this. They want to do the wealth tax, and you see what's happening now. You see somebody like was it Bezos that came out, or who just donated a bunch of money to homelessness?
Yeah, Jeff Bezos did.
was it 90 million?
98 million, almost 100 million. Yeah.
Which, I mean, you've all seen Twitter, and that's basically like all of us here pulling together $37 and handing it to the Salvation Army.
Right. And not only, there's a bigger problem with that story, too. And we're not doing a fake news of the week, but we should make this.
This is the fake news of the week. Let's do it right now.
So he's getting a lot of positive press, and a lot of people probably are just reading that headline saying Jeff Bezos donates $100 million to combat homelessness. Awesome.
Pennies.
Right? Besides the fact that it's pennies of his net worth, the money he donated was in Amazon stock.
What?
And can't be used for people that are in like temporary housing. Only for people that have literally no home.
So he literally couldn't just give $100 million.
No.
He had to tie strings to
it. He gave it in stock. So again, let's get off this whole bandwagon of philanthropy from billionaires is necessary for our society. Tax the shit out of these people and make them pay their fair share.
Yeah.
And then we don't have to worry about things like this.
Even the Bill Gates shit's bullshit. We keep hearing he's going to give his entire net worth when he's done to all these things. Well, how about now?
Yeah. Like, what's taking you so long?
Give 20% right now and you can eradicate homelessness in San Francisco tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's all just bullshit to make us think that the way we're trending with the Donald Trump type leaders is a long-term solution to running this country. It's putting these people like, hey, and I mean, listen, Bernie has somehow made himself a middle-class billionaire.
Which,
But he just has. He has the optics of not being these people. But at the same time, like, he's got a shit ton of money and I don't know his motives. I can take what he's saying, but like, I don't really want that anymore for our leaders. I want the people that might still have fucking student loans.
Yeah, give me the poor bartenders as our politicians going forward. Give me the person that worked minimum wage as a greeter at Walmart for most of their life.
Yeah, am I off on that? Like, I just think that's what I want running our country now.
You want normal people. Like, I think that's why
a
lot of people...
public service is supposed to be.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people like Warren. Like, the fact that she was a teacher. Like, She's
also a millionaire now, though.
Well, she is now. But like, but she has a path where she was like a normal person. Like, Trump has never had to work a real job in his life.
No, he's a fucking scammer.
He wasn't even born on third. He was born like an inch from home plate.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane.
He was born on the dugout.
Yeah. Already had scored and just done. Yeah.
So it's like, it's people that have that had to go to school, that had to pay off loans, that had to work a job to pay for school and stuff, that make something of themselves that you kind of inspire you and you say like, oh, they're here and they can be a good leader, but they can relate to a normal person.
Yeah, that message resonates.
And you know why the attacks happen on Omar and AOC. This is exactly why. Because the people that want to be Michael Bloomberg's and Trump's and want to just have their celebrity status or their money qualify them for higher office are terrified of the support AOC has. They do not want to see this success story come up because then that threatens higher offices. Now they're fine. We'll see sometimes when like the Republicans will agree with AOC on something and support her on some kind of issue because they want to say, listen, in that role, amazing, great idea, kid. Sit there, though.
Right.
They don't want to see this up in the Pence-Trump level. They don't want to see the president being Mayor Pete. They don't want a mayor. They just don't. They want you to be beholden to the PACs and want to get in there and be a billionaire and tell us how to spend your money. Yeah. It's fucking
crazy. At the end of the day, you nailed it there. It's the PACs. Getting money out of politics is first and foremost the biggest
thing Democrats need to do.
Yeah, if you want to seriously drain the swamp, then get corporate interests out of politics entirely. That is the number one problem with our system. It leads to corruption when you have money in there. And Donald Trump has just exemplified this to the highest degree, but it's always been there. It's been in American politics for a long time, and it's not going away until a party has the foresight to get into power. And yeah, you're going to have to shoot yourself in the foot.
Yep.
And you're going to have to say, look, I know you guys got me here, but sorry, for the good of the country going forward, what you donated to me can't happen ever again.
And I'll say, you put a good thing there. And what people have to realize is if we do get one of the candidates we want in office, there's going to be some pain. There's going to be some ripping the Band-Aids off moment. There's going to be some things that are going to make even upper middle class uncomfortable. And some of it might be higher taxes to make sure that people get health care. Some of it is going to hurt a little bit. And I think what ends up happening is a lot of people, the Bloomberg is a lot of people don't want to rip that Band-Aid off. They want to be like, look.
That's why he's in the race. That's right, why he jumped
Democrat,
in.
But we still get to keep some of the stuff that makes us comfortable. And I don't want to speak for anybody at the table, but I think we're all kind of, we're okay. Like none of us here sleep in our cars or like, you know, I don't want to speak for guys, but I'm sure we're paying our bills. We're sitting here doing a podcast and some of this Band-Aid might hurt us a little bit. Everybody at this table, like it's, but for the good of our country and where we're going forward, we can't keep going down this road.
I'd trade the privilege of being able to sit with you guys and drink whiskey and beer and do a podcast.
Yeah, maybe we do Miller
Lite
next year.
Yeah, the sake of people not dying or going bankrupt because of healthcare bills, I'd trade that in a fucking heartbeat.
Yeah.
And I mean, listen, going back to the healthcare thing, my daughter was just sick. My 5-month-old, we had to spend 6 days in the hospital. You know, with our insurance plan, thank God we have it. Like, we met the minimum, so we didn't have to pay a lot. But, like, I saw the bill if we didn't have insurance for that 6 days to make sure my kid could breathe. And guess what? Like, me and my wife do well. That would have hurt. And, I mean, maybe we got to suffer just a little bit to get this thing back on track. And I think that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely.
I would just like to add one thing. Bloomberg, get the fuck out of the race.
Can we talk about the...
Go away.
Any of you that are listening, support him. I just want you to go Google Stop and Frisk. Yeah. I want you to see what it did in New York City. I want you to see how behind this he was. He was instrumental in it. Just Google that and then say, listen, is this somebody I want to even give my time to? This is the kind of stuff that he's perpetuated. This is not the president.
Last thing I want to touch on, I've got a bone to pick with a lot of liberals right now. It surrounds the fervent support that people have for their candidates. There's nothing wrong with supporting someone that you believe in, right? But I feel like we've elevated these people to like Christ-like figures. And it's become this cult of personality, which we talked about with Donald Trump ad nauseum on this podcast. But we have other people like that. And whether it's, you know, a Biden, Warren, or Sanders, like every single one of these candidates has this group that seems like they take every single criticism of their candidate as a personal slight and will go out of their way to cut down other liberals, other Democrats, who maybe disagree on the best way to get to healthcare for everybody. Because let's remember that like everyone on that stage right now believes in universal healthcare.
Yep.
Which is astounding, first of all. But
salute.
Yeah. Amazing. And I'm amazed that we got to this point. And there's a credit to like the Bernie Sanders of the world that made this mainstream. I love it. Everyone on that stage supports universal healthcare. They differ greatly in their approaches to getting to that point.
That's politics, though.
That's politics. That's why the primaries exist. And it makes me sick that every time I'm online, I see people just bashing supporters of fellow Democrats and like essentially just personal attacks too. Like, how could you be so fucking stupid to think that this is the better person? Like, that's not a way to get people to look at your side and your point of view. Yeah, we talk about that with how's a Democrat supposed to talk to a Trump voter, right? That's a difficult discussion. There's a pretty big gap there in beliefs. The gap on the Democratic side is not as wide. We're talking like baby steps between these plans. And I still see so many people just spewing like toxic vitriol at anyone that does not support their candidate to the fullest. And it is so harmful, not only to your own mental health, like reading this shit, or God forbid you're on the receiving end of it. And I think we've all kind of been on the receiving end of it, depending on how involved you are in social media. There's never an excuse to be getting death threats from a fellow Democrat, or anyone for that matter, but least of all a fellow Democrat, just because you don't support their candidate's version of a plan for, say, healthcare, universal healthcare. It's insane to me, and we see it so often on social media. It's just a cesspool, Twitter especially. So if you can avoid Twitter, I highly recommend you do. Every day I open it up, I'm like, why do I do this to myself? And I do it to like keep tabs on what's going on in these different bubbles. But nothing disheartens me more about the state of politics than when I see people who agree on the same ultimate goal tearing each other down because they disagree over the steps to get there, rather than working together.
You're so spot on with this, because the one thing Republicans have done, it's misguided, and we hate it, and we hate the policies they're trying to get. They have circled the fucking wagons.
Absolutely.
Guess what? You know what was important to them? Judges.
Yeah.
The Supreme Court was important to them. They cared about what they cared about with abortion. They cared about getting Roe versus Wade overturned, which will probably happen. They cared about the lower level judges. And guess what they decided? We might fucking hate what Trump's doing. We might hate the rhetoric and the tweets. But guess what? They are 100%. You see it with this impeachment stuff. One person's broken ranks. Amish. That's it. He had to leave the party. He didn't just break ranks in the party.
And everyone else resigned.
He had to actually. And the rest of them just said, I'm going to retire.
Yeah.
But they're complicitly watching. And this is not a bravo Republicans. But Kevin, you hit it so on the nail. Democrats, when it's time, and this is right at you, Bernie supporters, guess what? It's circle the wagons time. Because the Republicans are showing us exactly how it's done.
Yeah.
They have the same talking points. They sit there. And guess what? They don't give a shit about Ukraine. They care about the fact that if something, God forbid, happens to Ruth Bader Ginsburg, that they're going to get another Supreme Court justice because Trump's there and McConnell's voting it. And they have their setup that they want to make moves, not for next year, not for 2020. We're talking about 2040.
Yep.
They're planning out that far.
The long game. We really need to get together, support our nominee, and we got to win this. Yep. That's got to be number one.
Mayor Pete.
We can argue about process and how to get there when you're in power.
Let's just get there.
Yeah, let's get there first. So on that note, gentlemen.
We have one last special moment. It's been in the news a lot that Trump had to use a Sharpie for his defense of his dealings with Ukraine. But he had to write in really big Sharpie. We can link to this on the site. The fact that he didn't want a quid pro quo. So we put Dennis up to a challenge. At the beginning of this episode, we asked him to read the writing. And we wanted to see, without notes, if he could tell us Trump's version of the phone call.
Okay.
With Sonderlin.
I want nothing. I want nothing. I want no quid pro quo. Tell Zelensky to do the right thing. This is the last word from the president of the U.S.
Dude, Dennis was able to memorize this after one reading while drinking during this podcast.
8.2% alcohol and Jameson.
And Donald Trump had to write this down. And
salute to you, Dennis.
Wow. Yes. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure.
Kevin's not sure what to do with that.
I'm not. Oh, God. Gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's been fun talking Democratic candidates with y'all. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving and happy Thanksgiving to everyone that might be listening to this on the day it drops, even though we have declared war on Thanksgiving as liberals. But I hope you still enjoy your day.
Genocide is bad, so I kind of get it.
If you want to follow us on social media, you can do so on Twitter and Instagram at @drinking_libpod. Also, check out our website at www.drinkingliberallypod.com. That's all we've got for you this week. Talk to you next. Cheers.